This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, what a day, what a week. I mean, it's okay. Here's the bottom line. The FBI, and you know, everybody's heard this by now. The FBI is back in 2016, before the election even had happened. People in the FBI are looking around going, what's going on here with Donald Trump? It sure looks like this guy is dancing to the tune of Russia. Now, there's a couple of questions that I think are worth asking here, and a couple of issues that are worth bringing out. And, you know, I would love to hear your opinion on this, too. A lot of this is just, frankly, opinion right now. But to what extent could it be that Donald Trump's embrace of Vladimir Putin and Russian perspectives and Russian historical narratives, you know, oh, the Russians went into Afghanistan, for example, because terrorists were coming out of Afghanistan, not because of the Brzezinski doctrine. No, it wasn't Brzezinski. It was whoever the Russian leader was at the time. But in any case, is it that Trump is just following his economic interests? That he thinks that if he does a deal, if he cuts a deal, you know, if he behaves in a way that keeps Russia very, very happy, that the consequence of behaving that way will be that Russia then, in turn, will say to him, cool, you know, you want to have a Trump Tower in Moscow? We're on it. You know, I mean, in other words, is this entirely about that and about keeping the spigot open? The millions of dollars that have come from Russia via the NRA for Republican candidates, including a number of Republican senators, and of course all the money that is going to the Republic, and back channel help, right? You know, a little work from the Internet Research Agency and all that kind of stuff. Is it that Trump is just protecting his own political and economic interests, or is it that he's actually, in other words, that would make him, I suppose, the unwitting dupe of Russians because he's doing it because he wants the money, or is there something very different here? I mean, is it possible that the President of the United States actually has a higher loyalty to a foreign country than to the United States? And if that's the context, if that's the case, is it that his loyalty to Russia is part of a larger loyalty to other autocrats and oligarchs as opposed to a loyalty to democracy? And could that flow out of his worldview of being, you know, a billionaire oligarch? He loves Duterte. He loves Sisi in Egypt. Duterte in the Philippines. Erdogan in Turkey. Of course, he's got a Trump hotel in Turkey. I mean, all these countries with autocratic leaders, North Korea, Kim Jong-un, President Xi of China, all these autocrats, Trump seems to embrace. So could it be that if your first commitment is to capitalism and the profit motive, rather than your first commitment being to small d democracy and a small r republic, could it be that that essentially requires you to support these oligarchs? This is like a really consequential question. And then if that's the case, I mean, if it's possible that what Donald Trump is really all about is destabilizing the United States, either because, hey, you know, Putin wants it and so he's going to do it because Putin's got something on him, or if he's trying to destabilize the United States, not because he's dancing to the tune of Russia or Putin or anybody else, but because he shares the opinion along with other autocratic leaders around the world. Like I said, you know, Duterte, Erdogan, Viktor Orban in Hungary, what's his name, the guy who's running Poland, the leader of the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland party, the new neo-Nazi right party in Germany, the Marine Le Pen group in France. I mean, you find this all over the world, that there are these autocrats, these oligarchs, who are fundamentally hostile to democracy because democracy makes it harder for them to basically own politicians. And owning politicians is the name of the game. I mean, we know now Len Blavatnik, this is this US-UK citizen who is a Ukrainian-born billionaire, buddies with the Russians. Him and his organizations passed along $3.5 million to Mitch McConnell. This is presumably money coming out of Russia, this calamari pony, posting over Democratic Underground over the weekend on Friday. That old Mitch boy, he writes, is bought and paid for. Mitch McConnell, $3.5 million through this guy. Lindsey Graham, $800,000. Marco Rubio, $1.5 million. John Kasich, $250,000. Scott Walker, $1.1 million. You know, is it that they're basically owned? I mean, is that what's going on? Is, for that matter, I mean, you know, which raises the really interesting question, is Mitch McConnell owned? In this case, not necessarily by the Russians, although they donated apparently $3.5 million to his campaign, or, you know, the two $25 million contributions from Shelley Adelson to McConnell's Senate Leadership Fund. Is it that, or is it that Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, her father is like this major Taiwanese shipping magnate who makes his money with China, with international trade. And, you know, when he married Elaine Chao, he went from being a poor politician to being a multi-millionaire. And suddenly her family started pouring money into his political campaigns and his career. The NRA last year, $54 million that they spent. And then this whole thing with Elaine Chao is getting very, very interesting. The Bank of China extends a $37 million loan to the Chao family shipping company, Foremost. In May of 2016, Elaine's sister, Angela Chao, is elected to the board of directors of the Bank of China, which now partners with Russia's VTB Bank. That's the bank that's under sanctions that Donald Trump was trying to get the sanctions lifted because that was the bank that was going to fund his Trump Tower Russia. So not only McConnell has links to China via the Chao connection, but also the Chao's family's interlinks with Russia. And thus, we see that Mitch McConnell has blocked every piece of legislation trying to protect the special counsel's investigation. He must be terrified of being caught. And that probably explains why back in 2016, when President Obama went to Mitch McConnell and said, "You're the leader of the Senate. It looks like the Russians are messing with the election. We need to do something about this." You know, Mitch McConnell basically said no. Which raises an even larger question. Right now, the one guy who is keeping the Senate shut down, keeping the government shut down, is Mitch McConnell. If Mitch McConnell would allow a vote on opening the government in the Senate, it would pass, and it would pass with a veto-proof majority. And that vote has already been had in the House. And if it was vetoed, the veto would be overturned. So the one guy who could open the government tomorrow morning, this afternoon, is Mitch McConnell. And he's refusing to do it. Which raises this really bizarre question. And I want you to think seriously about this question. Because just even asking this question is a frightening thing. Is it possible that the government shut down itself, which we know basically was completely unnecessary? Trump was ready to sign the legislation that just again passed the House. It passed the Senate unanimously on December 19th of last year. Trump was ready to sign that legislation that would have extended, that would have kept the government open and extended the negotiations for his, and would have given him $1.2 billion for his damn wall. Trump was ready to go along with that, and then the next day he says no. Why? The common story is that he said no because Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Rush Limbaugh told him to say no. But who told them to say no? Is this part of a campaign to destroy democracy in the United States? Is that what Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell are doing? And if so, are they doing it at the behest of Vladimir Putin? Or are they doing it at the behest of the fossil fuel billionaires, you know, the Kochs or the Adelsons? he's a gambling billionaire, or Robert Mercer. I mean, why are these guys trying to kneecap us? Is it possible that the government shutdown itself is part of a broader conspiracy to bring America to her knees, to take this country down, to finally destroy our faith in our own government, the faith that Ronald Reagan started attacking when he was inaugurated in 1981, and in that first inaugural address said, the government is not the solution to your problem, the government is the problem. That was the beginning. When Reagan came into office and said that, the day before he said that, well over 70-80% of Americans believed that government could solve problems. Now it's around 16%. This has been a relentless campaign for 50 years by Republicans and billionaire oligarchs to cause us to think that the government can never do anything right. Why? Because the government is the major impediment to billionaires polluting the air, ripping off their employees, cutting their own taxes by owning politicians. The government's the only thing that can stop that. So, of course, the billionaires want to take out the government. So, is this a Putin campaign? Is this an oligarch campaign? Is it both? Is it neither? Is the government shutdown that Donald Trump basically willed into being overnight and that Mitch McConnell has completely gone along with throughout the entire process? Are Obama, Pence, and McConnell being told to do this by Russians or somebody else? Are they being told to do it by the billionaire oligarchs who are libertarians and don't believe that the government should even be running anyway outside of having an army? Could that be it? I mean, is the end game here to prove to Americans, oh, you don't need us, we don't need no stinking government. Look at it. It ran for a whole month with no side effects, without government. I mean, what is the end game here? What are these guys trying to prove? How much damage do they want to accomplish? How much damage do they want to inflict on this nation before they can dust their hands off and say, mission accomplished? It's 20 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with your calls in just a moment. 19 minutes past the hour, sorry.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls and more of the news of the day in just a moment. And welcome back. Boy, a lot going on, just a lot going on. And this question, I think, fundamentally, this question. What do we do with this? Morris in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Hey, Professor, check this out. The Russians, according to the New York Times, the U.S. president is an operative for the Russians, right? If that is the case, everybody's thinking, well, impeachment. But there's another solution. I understand, because I spoke to a librarian, and I used to work at a library, that if this is true, that the president is an operative, then it's up to the attorney general to go and arrest him. You know anything about that? Check it out, and I'll be listening to your program. I know you're a civic guy, but check that out, because I don't know. But that blew my mind.
Well, no, it's technically it's true, Morris. The attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. And so, if somebody was going to arrest the president, it wouldn't necessarily have to be the attorney general. I mean, it could be any authorized law enforcement officer in the federal government at the behest of the attorney general.
Amen.
Yeah, so... But, first you have to have charges and all that kind of stuff. And also there's this debate. The Justice Department has been saying all the way back to Reagan's time, that actually all the way back to Nixon's time. Nixon, the criminal, his Justice Department said, no, you can't arrest a president. Reagan, the criminal, his Justice Department said, no, you can't arrest a president. And Bush Jr., the criminal, his Justice Department said, no, you can't arrest a president. So, kind of not surprised by those things, but we'll see where it goes. Morris, thanks for the call. Patrick in Mason, Ohio. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Tom, how's it going today? Look, you're on the button here. The only thing that can control rich people versus basically everybody else is government. It's the only thing that can contain them, because if not, they will crush us with the weight of their money. That's why they're trying to destroy the government from within.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed.
Which things that, I've been putting one and one together, for a number of years after listening to you, and then watching the debacle with Gray Davis as he got, you know, railroaded by the that recall. And I didn't pay attention to politics until then, and because he said something about energy companies in Texas, and I wonder what the heck is he talking about? Then right. Enron happened, right. And then I was like, ah, that's what's going on. So people have to learn to look at the see the stuff that the Great Oz doesn't want you to see.
Yeah, well, with Enron, and a lot of people are frankly not even old enough to remember it, but with Enron, what you had was a situation where a private for-profit corporation did not like the way that the governor of California was behaving, and they decided to take him down. And they did. You know, they ran these rolling blackouts across California, across the West Coast. And while we got to listen later to the tapes of the Enron guys laughing about it, no, grandma's going to have a fit. And then they used the popular dissatisfaction and anger around that and the price increases that were associated with it to kick out Gray Davis and replace him with Schwarzenegger. And you know, here we are. I mean, you know, California fortunately recovered from that. But that was about as dirty a dirty trick as you can play, Patrick.
That's I tell people basically what I told you about the rich and their money crushing us.
Yeah,
you know, we see that, you know, in all of these in what's that the lobby.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, Patrick. I got to run, but thank you for the call. It's 23 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. We'll be back. Is Donald Trump a foreign agent? And if so, is shutting the government down exactly what another government might want? We'll be back. So the question, the biggest question of the day is, you know, is Donald Trump shutting the government down part of a Russian plan, a Koch brothers plan, an Adelson plan, a Mercer plan? Is it the part of some foreign autocrat or domestic billionaire autocrat, wannabe autocrat, to damage the United States government? And if so, how much damage do they want to inflict on us before they say, okay, you know, done? So I want to toss that out. By the way, Congressman Ro Khanna is going to be with us for the entire second hour of our program today, taking your calls. And then in the third hour, we're going to get into treason and privatization of our schools. And apropos of that, the Los Angeles teachers went on strike this morning. And, you know, this follows, I think this is the eighth or tenth state now that has seen substantial teacher strikes. We had them just across the river here in Washington State just before the elections, in a number of other states before the elections. And in many cases, I believe in most all cases, the teachers won. But the main thing that the teachers are striking against in Los Angeles, and we need to point this out because this is part of all the same fabric, and that is the takeover of America by oligarchs who put money above patriotism. They're more concerned with how much cash they can make than they are with whether or not we have functioning public schools. The whole charter school movement, as it were, supported by billionaires like Bill Gates and Betsy DeVos, is all about turning public education, which is a multi-hundred billion dollar enterprise every year, turning that from a public function, which was efficient, relatively low cost, and, you know, for most of my lifetime provided one hell of a good public school system, of destroying that and replacing it with a for-profit school system where, you know, in high net worth areas, you've got really high performing schools, and in poor areas, not so much. And almost half of, in fact, perhaps more, somewhere in the neighborhood of half of all the schooling in Los Angeles now is being done by charter schools that by and large are not unionized and that by and large suck resources out of local public schools, which is why in some cases you have 40, 50 students in a classroom in Los Angeles, which is obscene. I mean, it's not only terrible and wrong, it's obscene. It's bad for the kids, it's bad for the teachers, it's bad for the system. It's exactly, therefore, what the oligarchs want, the people who believe that the government has no function other than running an army. And even that they shouldn't do. We should have Blackwater fight our wars for us instead. We should privatize everything. Why? So some oligarch can make a fortune on it. And why do we want to diminish the role of government? Because government can restrain oligarchs. Government is the only force that can hold back a giant corporation from ripping you off. Government is the only force that can prevent a billionaire from buying the politicians who are going to then screw you. Government is the only force that has that ability, the protective and police functions of government. So of course the oligarchs hate government. Of course the international oligarchs hate government. So how much damage will Donald Trump and his America-hating buddies have to inflict on the United States? How much damage will Mitch McConnell have to inflict on the United States before, you know, his wife's business, Chinese business partners say, okay, cool, enough? Or before Putin says, okay, you've done enough. I guess that was worth that $3 million in contributions. How much damage has to be done? Or is this all a completely innocent thing? Is Donald Trump just a totally naive do-gooder who somehow doesn't want his discussions with Putin to be recorded?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with your thoughts on these issues in just a moment. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Lewis in Chicago. Hey, Lewis, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. I just have to totally disagree with you on your perception of Trump. I'm sorry, I'm busy right now. But your perception that Trump is doing anything in regards to this Russian stuff. We already know that the dossier was a fake by Steele. He admits it himself.
Actually, has been nothing in the dossier so far, not one single thing that has been proved to be untrue. There are a couple of things, like did he hire hookers to pee on a bed, that have not yet been proven to be true. But there's nothing so far in the dossier that's been found to be untrue. And here we have, this is truly mind-boggling. This is after Trump's bankruptcies in 2006 going forward. Between 2007 and 2010, buyers connected to Russia. This is from McClatchy, D.C. Buyers connected to Russia or former Soviet republics made 86 all-cash sales, totaling nearly $109 million at 10 Trump-branded properties in South Florida and New York City. This is money laundering. I mean, this is fairly obvious. These guys own him, Lewis.
I have no business in Russia, so how can it be money laundering?
Well, if he's got no business in Russia, then how did he get $109 million from Russians?
He absolutely did not, but we do know that.
Lewis, look it up. Look it up. You know, this is a matter of public record. These are Russian billionaires who spent $109 million in cash. These were not mortgages. These were not, you know, and all of it was routed. And this is, again, from McClatchy, D.C., now, buyers connected to Russia or former Soviet republics made 86 all-cash sales, totaling nearly $109 million at 10 Trump-branded properties in South Florida and New York City. Many of them made purchases using shell companies designed to obscure their identities.
How convenient that is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's quite extraordinary that they're trying to hide the fact that they're doing money laundering, and we've figured it out. David, in San Francisco, listening on AM 910. Hey, David, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. You were, you know, what's Trump's motivation? That famous old acting question. I contend, of course, that he's greatly organized crime, but if you look at his allies are basically three different groups. The old 1776 aristocrats, the Tories that have always hated America and hated the Republic, you've got the Klan, and you got the Nazis. So he's organized crime being led on by their insistence. So it's a complex mixture of traitors plus organized crime.
Yeah.
Profiteers.
I would say that the organized crime piece of it, this is not the Sopranos. Tony Soprano was not a billionaire. When you're talking organized crime at the level of oligarchs like Donald Trump and many of these Russian and former Soviet state oligarchs, you're talking a whole completely different level of stuff here.
Well, have you ever read about Sam Giancana?
Yeah, actually, a fair amount.
I just read one by his brother and nephew. It's called Double Cross, and it's by Sam Giancana, the nephew, and his brother. And it, when you're saying these guys were not billionaires, according to this book, Sam Giancana could have been a billionaire about the time of the JFK assassination. Hmm. So they were money laundering, and there's a lot of foreign policy that's discussed in that book.
Right. Yeah, the big difference, though, is that Sam Giancana and Carlos Trafficante or Santos Trafficante, Carlos Marcello, those guys who you know, probably were mind-bogglingly rich, were more interested in staying below the radar than above it. And what we've got now are oligarchs who are just coming right out and saying, yeah, I'm buying political influence. The Koch brothers bragging about dropping $300-400 million in the last election. I mean, they're proud of the fact that
they've gotten brazen.
Right.
They're brazen in the
But the question is, is Trump trying to first of all, you have to ask the question, is Trump trying to damage the United States? I mean, when you look at what he's done at EPA, he's poisoning our air and water. You look at what he's done at Interior, he's selling off our public lands and basically raping a lot of them. You look at what he's doing at the Department of Education with Betsy DeVos, he's destroying public education. You look at what he's doing at the Veterans Administration, he's got three rich guys down at Mar-a-Lago who are secretly running the VA from you know, behind the screen. They have no official position. They've never been vetted by Congress. And the VA has started a privatization scheme. You look at what they're doing with the last budget for Medicare and Social Security, cutting back radically, and the IRS, cutting back radically on the number of people who can do customer service so that the service will suck, so that people will be angry and they'll want to privatize Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I mean, you just pick some branch of government. Trump has done damage in every one of these areas. So then the question is he trying to damage the United States because he is in bed with, afraid of, or sucking up to some foreign power? In this case, the boogeyman is portrayed as Putin in Russia. Although I think you could make a case that it's China via Elaine Chao and his cabinet and Mitch McConnell. I mean, who knows,
sure,
right? Is he doing this on behalf of some foreign power, or is he doing this in support of his own future personal wealth? Or are those two things not mutually exclusive? Is it both?
Well, corporate state, the more you study, you know, the rise of the brown shirts and the black shirts and under Hitler, they were two different organized crime gangs. In fact, Richard Condon, you know, the guy that wrote Manchurian Candidate, he has a lot of different books talking about the motivations of the Nazis were really more organized crime than they were political. Hmm. And so when you start looking at the corporate state and organized crime, they hire thugs, you know, whether it's Blackwater as a thug to capture a thing. You hire a guy like Manafort who ran coups for 20 years, well, for 40 years. You know, these are the big boys are actually hiding behind. They don't want to get exposed. They'll pin Manafort before they ever want to get exposed. Mm-hmm. So we've got a great opportunity, actually. It's when you were talking about shutting down government and the actual destruction of our property. You know, since we the people own America, and we the people are the employees of America, all of these unemployed or, you know, laid off government workers should be going back down to the office and making sure that some strange truck doesn't drive up and try to cart away all of the, you know, the assets.
Yeah, and God only knows that might be happening. David, thank you for the call and for your observations. I mean, this is serious stuff. And by the way, this point needs to be made over and over and over again. The one guy who could open the government is not Donald Trump. It's Mitch McConnell. And all he would have to do is say, I'm going to allow the members of the Senate to vote. That's all he'd have to do. And the reason he's not doing it is because enough Republican senators aren't demanding that he do it. And if you live in a state where you have one or more Republican senators representing you, I strongly encourage you to call 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. That's the switchboard for the U.S. Senate. Call that number and let them know And whatever state you're from, you know, just ask, say you're from Utah, you say, I want to speak to Mitt Romney, you know, I want to talk to my senator. Call, ask for your Republican senator, and then say, or it would be Mike Lee as well from Utah, and then say, please tell Mitch McConnell to hold a vote on reopening the Senate. I mean, very, very straightforward stuff. Ginger in Seattle. Hey, Ginger, what's up?
Hi. You might want to tell that previous caller he may not be able to get through. I think the government phone line is still down.
We checked this morning. Sure, called that number that I gave out, and it was answered. I mean, it may not.
Oh, good.
The individual senators may have chosen to close their offices or not. I don't know. We'll find out. But we got as far as the switchboard this morning before we.
Yeah, you've really hit something with me this morning. I've been thinking a lot, trying to focus more on money with Trump than the other stuff, but the other stuff is really in there too. And I think along with the government shutdown, in a way, Trump is also working on shutting us down, the base, by having them feel like, poor Trump, he's our leader, and he can't even do anything for us. The government gets in his way. He can't even build the wall. This is awful. And the rest of us are just getting worn down by all the junk that goes on every single day. And then I think in the background, there's guys that we're not hearing about that much, the Steve Bannons and the John Bolton.
Yep. Hey, Ginger, you just vanished. I don't know what happened, but Ginger just vanished. Ginger, good talking with you. Thank you. Cindy in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Cindy, what's up? Treason?
I just wanted to say, let's take this to its conclusion. Mm-hmm. Let's say Donald Trump is convicted of treason, and he's tried for treason. Would they take that to the ultimate conclusion, or would they give him an out?
Oh, I'm sure that they would give him an out. In fact, my prediction is that he's going to cut a deal where his son and son-in-law and daughter, both his sons, his daughter and his son-in-law, all, you know, get to skate, and he gets to skate in exchange for his stepping down. I mean, that's sort of like the deal that Spiro Agnew cut back in the day, when he was Nixon's vice president and he was convicted of taking bribes in New Jersey. I fully think that that's going to be how Trump gets out of this. I could be wrong. You know, we'll see, Cindy. We'll see. But let's not kid ourselves. What we're talking about here is either loyalty to domestic oligarchs or loyalty to a foreign nation, which is treason. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, this is really startling stuff that the FBI was investigating a presidential candidate during the election. And welcome back, Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Tom, I agree with you. Everything that the Trump administration has touched has damaged America. And there is an economic cost to that that could be put to it. But you also asked the question of how far are these oligarchs in these? Can I call them a secret society? You know, I mean, should we call them fascists?
I have no problem calling them fascists, but I'm using Mussolini's definition.
So, I mean, here we are. You asked the question, where are we going from here? How far will they go? And I think the answer is right in front of us, just Bob Barr. Mm. So if we look at how society has evolved since Iran-Contra...
Wait a second, you mean William Barr, the attorney general nominee, not Bob Barr,
I'm
the
sorry,
former congressman
William Barr,
from Georgia.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, who's gonna go in there and pardon everybody once they get caught.
Right. Just like he did for George Herbert Walker Bush. That's how he got Bush out of being investigated for Iran-Contra. He saved George Herbert Walker Bush's reputation and presidency.
Correct.
By shutting down an investigation.
Correct. So, and then you have the Barry Seal part of it. They were shipping drugs. The CIA were shipping drugs into America. And then the guy that the movie Don't Shoot the Messenger, I can't remember the journalist's name, that shot himself in the head twice.
Right.
You know, they overlooked so much and covered up the truth back then. And so this William Barr pardoned a guy for pardon people, or which overlooked him. that was shipping drugs, flying drugs into the United States, and that's the whole reason we have the shutdown.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes sense, but I think
maybe I'm missing a logical thread here, Randy. You're saying that the reason why Trump is maintaining this shutdown has something to do with William Barr coming along as AG?
Well, no, I think the shutdown. See, he's shut down in order to get security on the border. He shut down the government, which has put security risks, elevated security risk in flying through the TSA and other through the Coast Guard, because they're not being paid and they're not on duty like they should be. So, for the fact that I think it's a problem for Woody Barr in the hearing. If you go back, if they go back in Iran-Contra, and
which they absolutely should do. I mean, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush should have been held accountable for his role in treason to seize the presidency in 1980, and you know, William Barr got him out of that in 1992. By, you know, having him pardon Caspar Weinberger and five other people who were involved in that crime, and
correct,
thus completely burying for all time the investigation. I think the Barr is going to try and do the exact same thing with Trump. You know, in fact, I absolutely predict it. But that said, I don't see how that ties to the government shutdown. What am I missing?
It's about the security. Security is the common thread.
Security for who?
Is that although he's saying the shutdown is for securing the border,
right,
he is actually making the United States less secure.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I called Senator Grassley today, too. So.
Oh, good. Good. So you could get through to a senator's office.
Yes, sir. I did.
That's great. Good on you, Randy. Randy, thanks a lot for the call. It's always great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And thank you for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you. Gordon in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Gordon, what's up?
Hey, it's not Columbus, it's Williamsport.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But how you doing?
Good. How are
all
you?
Right. Hey, David and the guy I was just on hit something that I was going to say. But didn't Paul Manafort work on the campaign for Ronald Reagan?
Yeah. Yeah. And George Herbert Walker Bush. It was Paul Manafort's firm that came up with the Willie Horton ads that Lee Atwater, you know, was the principal architect of. But Lee Atwater worked for Paul Manafort back in 1992 when that happened.
Exactly. There's your thread.
It would have been
Manafort,
88, yeah.
If Paul Manafort is involved with Trump, and he said he would work for free.
Right.
And you go back 40 years, and we've been going struggling through this for 40 years. Isn't there some kind of connection there?
So to create the most paranoid pyramid possible, the Soviet Union, back when it was still the Soviet Union, decides that they're going to bring America to its knees. So they have their guy Manafort inside the Reagan campaign and inside the Reagan administration and then inside the George Herbert Walker Bush administration. And Manafort promotes the interests of the oligarchs here in the United States, who want their taxes lowered and who want basically America to be hollowed out from within. That process begins under the Reagan administration. It reaches its fruition now under the Trump administration. But it's always been the same process. It's been a foreign power, in this case Russia, maybe China. You know, the connection through Elaine Chao and her multi-$100 million company. Family, making Mitch McConnell richer than whatever, and all that money coming out of China via Elaine Chao. I mean, you could see this conceivably as a 30 or 40 year multi-generational conspiracy, or just, hey, it's just, you know, rich people in Russia and in Asia, their interests coincide with rich people in the United States. The Koch brothers want to see the government shut down. They hate government because it regulates them and diminishes their profits. The same way that, you know, Putin might want to see government shut down because we compete with him in some foreign arenas. Or China might want to see us shut down because they want to do their road and belt thing all over the world and they don't want us messing with it.
Hey, when you said that question, about, is there a common thread there? And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I said, well, didn't Paul Manafort work for Paul, Ronald Reagan?
Yep. And the common thread is oligarchs all over the world, whether it's American oligarchs like the Kochs or whether it's Russian oligarchs like Agorov or however you say his name. Gordon, thanks a lot for the call. It's thought-provoking stuff. Yeah, good talking to you. Donna in Groveland, California. Hey, Donna, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Tom. And I want to thank you so much for all the work you do and your programming. It's
thank
a godsend.
You.
But what I'm thinking about is the field trips that the Republicans took to Moscow, Republicans only, to Moscow on July the 4th. I can't recall whether it was in 2017 or 2018.
It was last year.
But it was last year.
Yeah, it was
peculiar.
Yeah, it was 6 months ago. For the 4th of July, there was a handful of Republicans who celebrated the 4th of July in Moscow. And you know, we never heard anything more about that story.
And that's what has my curiosity kind of, my antenna up. This is, no one discusses it. No one seems interested in what was discussed there or what happened there. But it kind of seems like if there was any mild resistance among Republican senators, it all went away after that, except for maybe a couple who just dropped out and weren't going to be a part of the process anymore. But I think it's a really interesting component, and I would sure like to know more about it. And if anybody could get to it, I'm sure it would be you or some of your
contacts.
I've
got the story. I just brought up the story. Let's see what year this is from. Yeah, this is from this year. This was July 5th. A group of four GOP lawmakers spent July 4th in Moscow. After several days of meetings with Russian officials, the group, which included seven Republican senators and one House member, was the first congressional delegation to visit Russia since the annexation of Crimea. It was Richard Shelby of Alabama, Steve Daines of Montana, these are all Republicans, Steve Daines of Montana, John Thune of South Dakota, John Kennedy of Louisiana, Jerry Moran of Kansas, John Hooven in North Dakota, and Representative Kay Granger, Republican from Texas. And they, for reasons unknown to all the rest of us, apparently, they decided to spend the 4th of July in Moscow. Go figure.
It's interesting because Kennedy from Louisiana, prior to that trip, could be, on very rare occasions, mildly critical of the Trump administration. That's all gone now. Hmm. So that's why I thought it was kind of interesting.
You think these guys went over to Moscow and somebody said, okay, we own you. You got elected because of the $50 million or $40 million that we laundered through the NRA. And, you know, you think they were threatened, or you think they were seduced, or do you think it was just a nice fact-finding trip to a country that, you know, I actually think should be one of our allies, Russia?
Right. I agree also. I think in the past, the hysteria about Russia and after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the travesty that was deployed on the Russian people through the Chicago Boys and that kind of thing, really set a course that has been so damaging that we'll probably never see the end of that damage.
Yeah, well, it's been damaging to the interests of everybody except oligarchs around the world.
The wealthy ones,
yeah,
exactly.
My point, the billionaires are doing just fine, thank you very much, with the way that Russia has turned out, with the way that China has turned out, with the way that the United States has turned out, the destruction of democracy here. They're loving it. They can buy elections less expensively.
And what they love more than anything else is profit, and that's what they've got.
So, yeah.
It's been nice talking to you, and you have a great day.
Thank you, Donna.
You
too.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, this is the question has to be asked. If Donald Trump is committing treason, if the shutdown of the government is part of an intentional, purposeful plan to harm America, what's the end game? Who is he doing it on behalf of? Is he doing it on behalf of billionaires here in the United States who want to shut down the administrative state, to paraphrase Steve Bannon? You know, dancing to the tune of Robert Mercer? Or is he doing it, at the behest of foreign oligarchs? Is he doing it because Putin wants him to, or Sisi, or Duterte? Or, you know, who could it be? Why?
You're listening to Tom Hartman.